Okay, we've got a lot on our agenda this afternoon. We're going to go right into the motion on the board, but before we begin our council discussion, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just need to make a statement on the record, relative to this framework. It is final action on Framework 3, so I will be recusing myself today on this final action because I am employed by companies that operate herring vessels that exceed 10% of total herring landings, which constitute a conflict of interest under the guidelines. So when we take votes, I'll be recusing.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Lori.
I would just suggest on the motion adding a clarification that says when a gear-specific cap is reached, the directed fishery for that gear type would close.
I think that carries the intent of the committee from last week. Council members, are you comfortable with that? Thank you, Lori. Council discussion on the motion. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, at the hearing committee meeting, of course, we discussed an initial motion, which was to go with a high option. And I and a few others disagreed with that. I made a motion to amend to go to the median value. And that did not pass because the vote was tied, I think, 5-5, something like that. And I made the motion to go with the median value in part because I am still dissatisfied with what we did in the amendment. That is, we did not adopt closures of hotspots, seasonal closures of hotspots. I thought we had enough information to make that argument and to defend that decision. Instead, we went along with the move-along strategy, the bycatch avoidance strategy, which I fully support. And I praise the industry for its involvement in that bycatch avoidance program. All those involved in it, my agency included, it's been very successful. The industry has done a great job with it. However, I don't think it's enough, especially in light of the way river herring, shad, bycatch can be spiky. We can get high amounts of bycatch. And frankly, because of my agency's concern about the river herring shad resource, river herring specifically, I need to continue to be quite conservative in my approach towards how we deal with protection of that resource and bycatch of river herring, shad, and the different fisheries that we have here in New England. I'm also heavily influenced by the fact that, as noted in our presentation this morning, we indicated that in our goals and objectives provide a strong incentive for the industry to continue to avoid river herring shad and reduce the river herring shad catch to the extent practicable. So, a strong incentive. I recognize monitoring problems. I recognize that the service has to work on this some more to better deal with the variability of catch so that we don't end up with an individual vessel's catch being extrapolated up to the entire fleet so that those who are not catching river herring, shad, are shut down because the bycatch cap is reached. So I understand that, and I'm hopeful that the service will work very hard on that particular monitoring issue so that the bycatch cap is correctly calculated in a representative way. So, with all that said, I'm uncomfortable with the 75th percentile. I don't believe it's consistent with the objective. And as I said, I'm influenced by the fact that we have no closures of hotspots in a seasonal way. So I would move to amend the motion to replace the reference to 75th percentile with the word median. And if I get a second, I'll highlight the numbers that change in the table given to us by Lori so we'll all understand the difference between the 75th percentile and the median.
Now, you're the chairman, but motion is seconded by Tom Dempsey.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, just to give you the numbers, since the motion's been seconded.
Yep.
On page 11 of the presentation given by Lori, in the slide that shows hearing committee recommendations 9-17-13, go to the box where it shows the cap area, Gulf of Maine, Cape Cod, Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, and Georges Bank, and change the numbers. This motion, if adopted, would change the numbers from 91 metric tons for Gulf of Maine to 85.5, and we would change the Cape Cod midwater trawl from 39.6 to 13.3. The Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, the midwater trawl would change from 277.2 to 123.7. And then finally, the bottom trawl would change from 102.1 to 88.9. So those would be the new numbers.
Okay. Council discussion. Mike?
I'd say I haven't finalize my view on this, but I'm quite sympathetic towards the concerns that David just expressed. I've tried to do the best I can at doing a quick education of myself about the stock status, and I just happen to have read the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission's most recent assessment, which is 2012, which basically says the stock's depleted is near record levels, and mortalities are too high, and then it points to the problem areas, and bycatch and ocean fisheries is identified as one of the major factors, or one of the factors they list. So it's hard for me to see how we could be supportive of a measure that doesn't in fact move in the direction of trying to reduce the average incidental cage. Incidental catch, whereas 75% actually doesn't do that. Thank you.
PK.
Yeah, I can't support the motion to amend. I think those numbers are too low. I thought at the committee meeting there, we found a good compromise at 75%. And Vincent had said it earlier, I know this is just a process, but to start picking numbers, and then I had mentioned that, you know, the stock we're going to, the industry is going to, because the stock is growing, is going to keep running into more abundance of the river herring. So I would hate to, I thought 75% was a good compromise, and I can't support these numbers. They're a little too low.
Terry.
Yeah, I was going to say I couldn't support that. I mean, I think Lori said that it was like a 50% decrease. I'm pretty sure she said it was a 50% decrease. We're don't go on with the 75%. So I'm not going to support the motion. Man.
Mary Beth.
Obviously, I won't be voting on the motion, but I don't support the motion to amend. If you look at the numbers for Southern New England, the high is 925,000 pounds, and what's the 75th percentile is almost half of that. So it's a significant reduction. 75th percentile is not 75% of the high. That's quite different. And the other thing I would point out is that in the data that's used here, it includes years in which the industry participated in a bycatch avoidance program. So, you know, these reflect a rigorous program that the committee had a presentation on and considered during its debate on the topic. And many of these numbers are, you know, inclusive of a move-along strategy that our presentation, clearly the researcher felt that the industry was at the midwater trawl level, 100% participation, and there was evidence that, yes, in fact, when they encountered river herring, they moved along. So for those reasons, I would not support this motion.
Chairman Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been reflecting on the I guess the options relative to the stated goals and objectives, and trying to think of those in terms of coordination as well, recognizing this is the first year out with the caps for both councils, and I think the PDT has had some conversation about trying to have a more effectively coordinated approach in the future, but this is the first time around. Nonetheless, I think it is important that ultimately whatever options are selected support and advance the goals and objectives. And that's a similar discussion to what we had when this played out in our council. We considered a range of options. We had a relatively high number that came out of our committee discussion, and we went through a subsequent debate. And it came back to that, really, whether or not the management action supported the objective. And looking at the objectives about trying to incentivize the continued avoidance of river herring and shad, and then also in the introduction, it makes reference to trying to minimize all catch of river herring and shad, or river herring in the Atlantic herring fishery. I guess I would ask if the original motion would in fact be expected to reduce the catch of river herring on average, because it seems like if all we do is eliminate the outliers, there's some reduction, but does it incentivize a reduction on average? I'm not sure. Whereas it seems the median type approach would in fact on average reduce the catch of river herring. And in terms of impacts and practicability, I think if we say that will necessarily lead to impacts, then we're perhaps dismissing the potential benefit of the avoidance programs that were part of the strategy of this approach, because this was offered as an alternative to the spatial and time-based area management of the fishery that might be thought of as being more restrictive or micromanaging the details of the fishery. So I think leaving some room for that improvement is probably more consistent with the amended motion. Thanks.
Other council members? Tom?
Yeah, I think I'll just follow up on what Chairman Robbins had to say. I think that makes sense. I mean, if the goal of the action is to reduce the impacts and motivate or incentivize practices that are sort of more protective of the river herring, then taking a median approach is, I think, the better choice.
John.
Just 2 points of information, which I think are correct, and if they're not, someone correct me. I think the mid took a median approach. Is that, and if my addition's correct, that's probably a 50-50 proposition. The total of the 75% is 510, and the total of the median is 311.
PK.
I think I have a question for Lori and then for Chairman Robbins. How many samples did that represent, both up here and down in the mid?
The table that shows you the sampling is on page 6 of the presentation. The top half of the table shows you for each area and gear type how many trips were taken that landed more than 6,600 pounds, and the bottom half shows you how many we had sampling for. So, I mean, it's variable, but, it's right there, so you can take a look at it.
PK?
Does that cover the mid, too, as well?
Well, it covers any trips landing 6,600 pounds or more than 6,600 pounds of herring. So it would cover any mackerel trips that landed more than 6,600 pounds of herring. But if they were clearly just mackerel trips, they would not be in here. But that's the exact same way. It's a similar method that the MID used to identify their trips in their area. It was trips landing more than 20,000 pounds of mackerel.
Rick.
Thank you, Terry. I'm looking at the table from our briefing book when we had our decision, and the percentage of total mackerel landed that was observed by the trips involved in the analysis was 11%. It indicates the number of observed trips that the ratio was derived from was 14.
Terry.
I guess I need Lori to clarify something. Didn't you say doing that 75% was a 50% reduction in river herring catch in your presentation?
Well, I was just using the Gulf of Maine as an example, and it doesn't carry across, because there's a lot of variability, it doesn't carry across to every area. But if you look on page 7 of the presentation at the Gulf of Maine area, the point I was making is that the 75th percentile represents a reduction from a high catch level observed in the last 5 years. So in the Gulf of Maine, the high was 182.7. The 75th percentile is 91. So in this case, in the Gulf of Maine, the 75th percentile is a 50% reduction from the highest catch level seen in the last 5 years.
David.
Yeah, it's been noted, and correctly so, that we are seeing some increased abundance in our runs, some evidence that the abundance of river herring in particular is increasing, and that is very fortunate. It's a payoff from, you know, what the states in particular have done over the years, especially recent years, to try to rebuild this extremely important resource. So it's true. But just because abundance has increased, we should not say the bycatch of fishing vessels that will take those river herring should be allowed to increase. It's countering the good work that has been done, the restoration work that has been done. It just augments it. It increases the necessity of there being even more avoidance of bycatch. To me, is another compelling reason why the lower number, the median value, should be the one we select. But I'll highlight again, I recognize that it could be, and according to the analysis provided by Lori, and probably will be, restrictive, very restrictive, and put the industry at risk in some areas unless they actively avoid river herring, those areas where they know the river herring bycatch is likely to be high, and to increase their efforts in the avoidance program to continue to catch the sea herring that they're entitled to catch, but to keep that river herring shad bycatch down.
Mary Beth.
Well, I had a comment and a question. I think that increasing their efforts in the avoidance program, we currently have 100% participation by the Midwater Trawl Fleet. I'm not sure how you increase above 100%. Vessels are actively avoiding it today. And, our goals and objectives for this action are to reduce to the extent practicable, which is consistent with the national standards. And if the biomass of river herring increases, the practicability goes down with, it just clearly does. The more fish out there, you're going to see more fish. So I have some issues with that. But the question I had was, do we have information on from the federal survey indices, the trends for river herring? My understanding is that they've also seen increases in those trends. And while the other information present in the assessment is on a river-by-river basis, which is difficult to then translate into, at-sea interactions, does anyone have that information on the federal survey?
Lori.
I do have the river herring and shad indices. They did not make it yet into the document. Just one of those things I have not gotten to yet. I haven't had a chance to really dig into them and look at them. We will have that information available. I can't speak to what the trends are because I haven't had a chance to really evaluate the information.
Tom.
I think there are two parts of looking at the sort of status of a stock, and one is absolutely the trends. And I think even if those trends were in the right direction with river herring, the other part of that is the abundance. And I don't think anybody here would argue that that river herring is a strong, robust stock, certainly not in many of the areas that we're talking about and that we care about. So I think, whether it's increasing or not is helpful to know, but probably not central to the point. The point is they're depleted, severely depleted in many, many spots, and that's why we're here. I think the other issue in terms of supporting the median, highlighting the highest ever level of interaction, and saying that the sort of the median is a significant step down from that, I'm not sure that's the measure of success. I think we could all probably hold ourselves to a slightly higher bar in terms of what's practicable and what a successful outcome would be here. And I think saying that, listen, this is the highest interaction rate that we've ever seen, so we probably should get as close as we can to that, I just don't think that's an acceptable outcome. So, again, I support the motion to amend.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm also thinking a bit about consistency with the way catch advice is derived for other stocks. And I sort of remember back being an SSC member. And as an SSC member, when there were data-poor situations and we weren't able to do some sort of an analytical assessment to derive an ABC advice, it was common to look towards recent average catch as a baseline. And so if the view was that the recent average catch was approximately at the reference level you wanted, then that might have been the catch advice. If there was a concern that you had to reduce the catch to get to the reference level, then it might have been some fraction of recent average catch. I don't ever recall a case where someone would say, let's use the 75th percentile of recent catch levels, because using recent average obviously will constrain people involved in the fishery 50% of the time. That's the consequence of a median. So, again, I'm just sort of thinking about this in the context of consistency with the way ABC advice has been given in other situations where data was limited, but you had to work off of it, off of some catch information.
Is there any further discussion from the council? Russ, you have, how many folks in the audience want to comment on the motion to amend? Okay. Starting back with Dick. We'll go Patrick, and then I saw Peter.
Dick Allen, representing the fishing vessels, Gene McCausland and Isabel Taylor. There's a lot about this that troubles me. You know, it's a highly variable event as far as I can see. You've got using a short time period and the catches are all over the place. And so to pick any one number and apply it to a given year seems to me to be inviting a crisis in the future. That you're probably going to be faced with shutting down this fishery, even if they're highly successful at reducing the average catch, because it's going to be that one year that something happens that they go over the number that you've chosen. So that's one thing, one reason that I don't think you ought to pick the lower number. The other thing that I find troubling is that you're using a period of time in which this fleet has been developing and increasing the participation in this voluntary avoidance program. So it's not like you're looking at the long-term history of the fleet and saying what was their average catch and, okay, we ought to try to reduce that. So you're kind of penalizing this fleet for the actions that they've already taken. And we hear so many cases where fishermen say, don't cooperate because whatever you do that works, they're going to come back for more. They're just going to keep hitting you harder and harder. And so this is just a clear example of fishermen who cooperated. They've got a good program going, and you use those numbers to say, okay, these are your numbers, now we're going to reduce you more. And that just doesn't seem right to me, and it doesn't seem like it's going to engender cooperation in the future. And let me just say that I started catching river herring, alewives, buckies as we call them, when I was a teenager. And my sister and my brother-in-law cut the roe out, sold it to local restaurants. After that, I caught them for lobster bait. And then they kind of disappeared. And I'd like nothing more than to see a robust river herring population. But I think you have to do it in a way, and it seems like things are working and some of the runs are starting to come back. And I would just hate to see you take an action that just invites a crisis and everybody's back here saying, oh, this isn't what we meant to happen. You know, everybody was doing the right thing, and yet we're faced with shutting down this fishery, even though they succeeded in bringing their average catch down. It's just that one year that's going to catch them up. So I would hope you don't vote for the amendment. Thank you.
Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little bit confused by the argument going on the table. It seems like we have some, I'm hearing we don't catch many, which was the storyline in Amendment 4, to now we're going to catch too much and shut us down. But we have a successful avoidance program. Does anybody not see that these arguments are just slamming into each other without my opinion even being thrown into the middle of this? Not to mention that the avoidance program is not mandatory, is not required, and people could just, if they didn't like what the results were doing, could just jump right out of it. But I sort of look at this just like Haddock, right? So in Haddock, in Amendment 1, it was a bycatch avoidance program, and we don't catch haddock and we don't catch ground fish, and all of a sudden we need a cap, and now we need more haddock, and today you may actually be discussing at least a piece of correspondence regarding even more haddock. And it's the same thing with river herring. We don't catch them, we don't catch them, we don't catch them. Now we've got a ton of them, and now we're afraid, even though we have an avoidance program, that the number's going to go too high. So to me, it seems like the medium is almost screaming at you that it should be at least what's going on, you know, what you said for a cap. But let me throw another one in there. If you really want to reference, and I understand council members trying to struggle with how is this the biological impact, Southern New England, Dr. Pierce's motion, which I particularly support, 127 metric tons times 2,200 pounds a metric ton times two fish a pound, and that's probably conservative. You're looking at 500,000 fish. Would you like to compare that with the known landings and with the known returns in the state of Rhode Island? Could we get a number of what that percentage, what that ratio is? Because I'm willing to bet it's more than 10%, and I'm willing to bet it's more than 20%, because I know one of the big runs there is only 110,000. When you're talking about a fishery that can wipe out runs and potentially wipe out in that one area the whole state's worth, if you had a series of bad events. So this is not this gigantic, huge number. This could potentially wipe out a significant portion of Southern New England strong runs. So if you're really talking about impact, like, that's the way that we see it in the street. We who work in our runs and who help, like, get this stuff done. It's a little bit bizarre here in the argument when the skyrocket numbers that you're talking about, and I get it, compared to a massive industrial fishery, it may be less than a percentage point. When it comes to what it really does when these mistakes do get made, you're talking about significant impact. It wipes out a whole run at a time, and you're talking about, with the Southern New England number here, enough that it could take a big, big piece of the state of Rhode Island's numbers. That's what a potential impact I would hope you would at least consider. Since we're throwing around these arbitrary numbers, there's a number to consider. How much you're potentially going to allocate to this fishery, because that's what you're doing, is allocating a number of river herring to this fishery. And compare that against what's the runs in the front of the area that you're encountering these fish. And we may not be able to yet trace them back to the run, but I'm pretty sure the Southern New England bycatch is going to be attributed to runs in the neighborhood of Southern New England. And compare them to what's there, and you'll see a potential significant impact. That's just a common sense standard, but it's a standard that I think you should consider. I think the median is absolutely the right way to go. Thank you.
Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. The goal of this framework was not to minimize impacts on the herring fleet. It was to provide strong incentives to avoid river herring and shad to the extent practicable. I think the analysis even suggests that it's not the whole fleet. It's really just one gear type within the fleet that is exposed to any risk of impact, depending on where you set the level. And bottom trawls and purse seine seem to be relatively clean in terms of their impact. So we're really talking about the midwater trawls. It's clear that the 75% caps do not provide strong incentives. It would allow increases over the current catches, in some cases significant increases. I just wanted to add that river herring, as you all know, were historically a really important forage fish for coastal fishing communities and coastal fish. And from my perspective, and I'm not a scientist, the lack of this inshore movement of forage fish may well be one of the ecological keys why areas like Penobscot Bay, which hasn't been commercially fished for 50 or 60 or 75 years, still doesn't have any of the larger predator fish coming in because there's no food. This fishery has not made an investment in protecting river herring. The American people have made a huge investment. CLF has helped bring more than $2 million of federal, state, municipal, and private money into removing dams and restoring flows in rivers so that herring could come back. The state of Massachusetts has done many times that. The state of Maine, through the Penobscot River Project, is putting, and the federal government is putting, hundreds of millions into this. So there are huge public investments in this herring restoration effort, and to send a signal back to this huge effort that you're not actually going to try to minimize river herring bycatch, particularly where there are other gears that are much lower in their bycatch of river herring that could accomplish the same purpose of providing lobster bait and everything else like they always used to, is really an unfortunate message. And I think it really does reject, again, the importance of ecosystem-based fisheries management, which so many of you talk about, but when you see it right in front of you, you don't seem willing to take the necessary actions to act from an ecosystem perspective. That's what we're talking about here. There are alternative gears. 75% is way too high. The information I saw at the committee and yesterday was that the low and the median may have impacts on the fleet, may have impacts. We're not even going to the lows. So I support Mr. Pierce's amendment, which is always a delightful opportunity to have. And I would also, so I don't have to come back to the mic, support the notion that Tom Dempsey put forward of putting some forward triggers in place for the Georges Bank area. Thank you.
Erica.
Thank you. Erica Fuller speaking on behalf of the Herring Alliance. As Chairman Roberts pointed out earlier, the law requires you to manage the nation's stocks, whether they're data poor or whether they're data rich. And the two of the objectives of this amendment were to both reduce river herring bycatch and to coordinate with the Mid-Atlantic. To choose the 75th percentile would really do neither of those things. The law requires you to minimize bycatch consistent with National Standard 9 in this fishery, and this is one of the only things that actually minimizes bycatch in this fishery. We've heard from two scientists at the table recommending the median, and I want to point out that from the conservation community's perspective, even the median is a compromise. Best available science and one of NMSA's technical memos would say that for highly vulnerable schooling stocks like river herring and shad, perhaps you should be cutting recent catch by 50% just to get the OFL and perhaps scaling it back further to get a limit or an ABC. I understand it's not an ABC, but it's a limit. The MID specifically used the median because it could both reduce catch and allow fishing if the industry actively avoided the fish. Asking that you support Dr. Pierce's motion. Thank you.
Steve.
Steve Weiner, Choir Coalition. I think what I heard today is that a median approach may not Well, I think I heard, Lori, that it would not affect probably any curtailing of fishing in the Gulf of Maine. Did I hear that?
In the Gulf of Maine.
In the Gulf of Maine, right. Not necessarily in all the other areas. The other thing I just wanted to ask, make sure I understood it because I was a little confused in the beginning, that when a gear-specific cap is reached, the directed fishery for the gear type would close. So that means specifically in the Gulf of Maine, that would be midwater trawling.
Mm-hmm.
Not seining, not bottom trawling. And one other comment before I tell you what I think you ought to do. I hear today that people say that the river herring stock is improving. What backs that up? I've heard that three or four times from people at the table today, saying it's improving, it's getting, there's more of them, so therefore there needs to be a justification for a higher than 75% to protect against that growing stock. What is there proof of that? I say you support the median, and that's what choir speaks for. Thank you.
Two more. I don't know you. In front, and then Don, and then we're going to come back to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. My name is Abigail Franklin. I'm a citizen of the town of Brewster, Massachusetts. I work with town-appointed herring wardens, but my opinions are my own. I recognize the desire to minimize the impacts and avoid closure of the Atlantic herring industry. But I just want to remind the council that there are town fisheries for the species and that they have been closed in Massachusetts since 2005, and other states have taken measures to close their fisheries as well. Because this species is anadromous, their population is impacted by decisions and actions on land, freshwater, estuaries, and ocean on a town, state, and federal level. The towns and the states are working hard to increase the population by closing fisheries, removing dams, installing fish ladders, cleaning out runs every spring, and implementing count programs to get a better handle on their population. But this addresses only one portion of their life cycle. So I think it's my opinion that the towns are looking to the council to make decisions in federal waters that will increase the population. And I support the median metric for the catch cap. Thank you very much.
Don.
Don Swanson, Coastal Conservation Association, New Hampshire, plus a recreational fisherman. What Dr. Pierce talked about, hit it for me, was the hotspot areas. Because I always thought in the beginning, if they avoided these areas 100%, we'd be seeing better. But even with where boats are avoiding that area, all of a sudden we're starting to see river heron come back a little bit. How much they come back, I don't know. But I have to wonder, if we had gone this way and closed these areas during the months that they knew the river herring were there, would we be better off today or whatever? So with that, we're left to what we're seeing up here today. I think we could have done away with this thing here. If they avoided those areas during those times, you wouldn't be talking about closing down a fishery. The heron people would be allowed to go out in different other areas and catch it, and you wouldn't have to worry about a closure or something like that. So with everything that's going on today, I support the amendment that Dr. Pierce put on. Thank you.
Back to the council. Is there any further discussion? Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've done a lot of work on the history of river herring, and it's not surprising that it's a complicated process, but here on Cape Cod, when river herring stocks decline, the human communities that relied upon them declined as well. I support this motion. I think the amended motion, I think it's this reasonable way to go. It meets our goals and objectives, and clearly there's a public interest in us taking a longer view. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
John.
I speak in favor of this amendment. The agency did not list river herring. That doesn't mean we think it's a healthy stock. We don't. And I think the goals are to reduce catch, as was pointed out, and also to coordinate with the MID, which said that a median was appropriate. Both those have been mentioned. And I think there's been good argument here by many in support of this. I also mentioned before lunch that this is connected to previous actions we've taken on Amendment 5, future actions we're going to take on issues like stocks in the fishery. They're all connected in many ways to how we go about protecting river herring. And this needs protection, and this amendment provides better protection.
Mary Beth.
Thank you. I don't think I have to say too much. I think most people probably already have decided how they're going to vote on this, but this reference to human communities, there doesn't really seem to be a lot of consideration about the impacts to the Atlantic herring fishery and the human communities that rely on Atlantic herring. And in the state of Maine, those measure in the thousands. And that's concerning to me. Here we are on Cape Cod having a meeting, and the fishery is taking place in well north of us. And as we haven't heard from one single herring fisherman at this meeting, and so that's concerning to me. I mean, there was a mention of no food in Penobscot Bay. Well, Penobscot Bay is that's my backyard. I was unaware there was no food in Penobscot Bay. I don't think that's true. And we have a vessel, the fishing vessel Starlight. There's been a fishing vessel Starlight working in the Gulf of Maine for close to 40 years. For the past 20 years, we've been using a hull that delivers bait to Vinyl Haven, an island community that is extremely dependent on our ability to get that bait in there. 90% of the income on the island is fishery-related, and it is important. And that is an important human community.
Are there any final comments? Final?
I'd like to request a roll call vote.
Okay. Roll call vote has been requested for the motion to amend. Please answer yes, no, or abstain. I believe, Mary Beth, you're recusing yourself. Mike Sissonlein?
To amend, yes.
John Quinn?
Yes.
David Pierce?
Yes.
Matt McKenzie?
Yes.
Peter Kendall?
No.
Cherie Patterson?
No.
Ellen Gaethel?
No.
Tom Dempsey?
Yes.
John Bullard?
Yes.
Frank Blount?
Yes.
Vincent Balzano?
No.
Terry Alexander?
No.
Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Motion to amend carries 8501. We're on to the main motion. Those who support the main motion as amended, please indicate so. The motion carries 13001. Dr. Pierce.
Yes, I've already mentioned consideration of the monitoring that would be necessary. Monitoring will be extremely important, and careful monitoring will be required. I can say that because I speak from experience. Many of us around the table have had to deal in our states with the sea herring fishery, which is important to us. We have an industry in our states. with a haddock bycatch cap, for example, the need to have accurate tallies to the extent that they can be accurate, the take of haddock as a bycatch in the sea herring fishery is important. In the past, there's been some disagreement about the amount of haddock that has been caught. The service has done an admirable job coming up with a monitoring strategy to deal with it. However, haddock is different from river herring and shad in this particular fishery, and that's been highlighted already by Laurie in her presentation. High variability, and I recognize that. And I know the service recognizes that, but still, to be sensitive to the sea herring industry itself and all of the individuals involved in that fishery, to be sensitive to the very good points made by Mary Beth, I would move to request, remove the amend, if you would, please. Okay. I would move to request the National Marine Fisheries Service recognize the high variability of river herring shad catch rates in the Cape Cod area and moderate variability of catch rates in the southern New England mid-Atlantic area by carefully extrapolating and expanding river herring shad catch from individual vessels to all vessels' catches in those areas. Basically, it's a position statement that when the service develops this monitoring approach, further develops it, works on it, that great care is provided in extrapolation of individual catches from specific vessels to the entire fleet. And just to send a message to the service that we recognize you're careful already, but this is so important. This has to be done in a transparent and right manner. So that's my motion, Mr. Chairman. That's specific to monitoring.
Is there a second to Dr. Pierce's motion? Seconded by Tom Dempsey. Tom?
I guess my question in seconding it, I certainly support, I think, the intent, but I guess my question is, how would the service interpret this? And we're going to expand river herring shad catch from individual vessels to all vessel catches. So is this just highlighting that we want them to do that very carefully? Because if so, I'm not trying to be flip, but if so, I support that.
David.
Yeah, if I may. I mean, there are many people in the herring fishery, midwater fishery in particular, the trawl fishery in particular, who have expressed great concern in the past to me personally and to the National Marine Fisheries Service specifically about the way in which the bycatch estimates for haddock have been calculated. I think we owe it to those individuals here who represent the industry to provide them with a better understanding as to our sensitivity to this issue, and that we want the service to be extremely careful in terms of how they extrapolate and expand from individual vessels. It seems simple enough. Maybe it's not needed, but again, I think it's a responsible position for us to take.
Terry.
So, I agree with the motion, but I would hope that they would be being very careful when they're extrapolating because it has huge, not only with river herring, but with marine mammals in the gillnet fishery and haddock and yellowtail bycatch out on eastern Georgia's, cod and yellowtail bycatch. So, I would support that, I guess, yeah.
Mary Beth and Mike?
I certainly support the intent of this motion. I think I might be more supportive if the council in general, were to write a letter to the center saying that review of the butterfish bycatch methodology were a priority in the near future, that would also be well worthwhile. I mean, there are issues in the way the haddock cap has been done, and even though I'm have a pretty good understanding of how the methodology works, I think for many there's a lack of understanding, and I have explained it to the best of my ability, and I'm sure I don't explain it I mean, I don't understand it totally. So I just think there's a need for some increased transparency in how this is done. There's a need to review its performance and the initial peer review that said it was statistically sound said that, and I thought that would happen this summer. It did not. So, but I support the intent of this motion.
Mike.
Well, I certainly support the intent. I'm a little worried about the wording, the use of the word extrapolation. I'm not sure I would refer to the estimation method as extrapolation at all. So I'd be more comfortable just in terms of being rigorous about this if it said something like by applying the most statistically rigorous methods practicable or something like that. I think it the same sense. We all agree we want it done properly, and I'm sure the center wants to do it properly. But this almost seems to be prescriptive on how the estimation is done, and I think that should be left to the professionals.
David?
Thanks for allowing me to have a third bite at the apple. Another reason why I make this motion is John Bullitt is before us, and if we carefully read, and we have, I'm sure, the reasons why the service denied that which I had supported aggressively, a slippage cap that was denied. I understand why the logic is before us in the letter explaining the reason for the denial. The service makes it very clear, and I quote, the vessels may continue fishing following slippage events 1 through 10, but must return to port following the 11th slippage event, regardless of the vessel's role in the first 10 slippage events. In other words, there may be some vessels that were innocent, so to speak, yet they're going to be hit by that slippage cap. They denied it. Well, we have a bycatch cap, and there may be vessels that are completely innocent of bycatch of river herring shad, yet they'll be shut out of an area where they need to fish or want to fish for sea herring. So this is to, again, sensitize the service regarding this very critical issue, especially in the context of the denial of the slippage cap.
Is there any further council discussion on the motion? Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Okay. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. No, 12. John's not voting. Those opposed? Those abstaining?
I have more than a 10% interest.
Motion carries 12-0-1-1. Tom?
Thanks. Hopefully we can do this quickly. I think it's pertaining to the issue with regard to the Georges Bank area. I understand why we don't have a cap in this action. We don't have significant bycatch in that area. But I think in order to be consistent, it would make sense to hardwire into the framework that we would put a cap in the event that we had documented bycatch. So Karen has the language of the motion. Move to include language in the framework specifying that if bycatch of river herring shad is documented in the Georges Bank area, an area-based cap for Georges Bank will automatically be set during the following cap specifications setting action.
Seconded by PK. Council discussion? David?
I guess I'm wondering if any specific level of bycatch would trigger this concern, and I ask the question because I have to turn to Lori and ask her, because I can't recall, has there been any bycatch of river herring in the Georgia Bank area, and has it been extremely small? So we're not dealing with it now, so if there is some bycatch now, then we have to think about perhaps some number that would trigger consideration of a bycatch cap. If there's no bycatch now on Georges Bank, then the wording of the motion is fine.
Based on the last 5 years, there has been almost no bycatch observed on, almost no catch observed on Georges Bank. The catch rates are as close to zero as you can get without being zero. With respect to this motion, I just want to I just want to make sure everybody's clear on the way the framework is set up. We're going to be, the only thing that the framework doesn't do is continue to specify the cap amounts. Those will be done in the specifications process. But there's nothing in Framework 3 that wouldn't allow us to set a cap for Georges Bank, as I mentioned earlier. So we're going to be revisiting this in 2015 when we set the 2016 to 18 specs. And at that time, we will be evaluating bycatch in all of the areas, Georges Bank included, and bringing forward options for the caps for 16 to 18. So I'm just a little bit unclear because this motion is essentially predetermining that the council's going to set a cap on Georges Bank if there's any bycatch documented, and are we talking about in 2014 and 15? I'm just a little unclear on what it is this motion's doing, what decisions this motion's making about what we're going to do in the next round of specifications, because we'll be revisiting this in 2015.
Tom?
I think those are two perfections that we can hopefully deal with quickly. The intent is any increase, that if there's any documented increase to the bycatch of river herring and shad. And then finally, maybe replace after automatically, instead of automatically be set, automatically be considered during the following cap specifications. So if there's an increase of bycatch out there, relative, obviously, to what there is now, which is effectively zero, then we will automatically consider that in the next specifications, and that will, I think that will get us there.
You okay, PK? Vincent?
Well, I believe that the framework says we are already going to do that anyway. I think Lori was just starting to say that, and that was my understanding as we were doing this, is that we could update the catch cap as the information became available. I don't think we necessarily excluded Georges Bank. It's just we didn't have any information to set one with.
Tom?
I actually think we have the information. It's just it's not a problem now, and that's why it's not there. And this just makes it more explicit. And it just says, listen, we're going to cover the entire area. It's demonstrating that we're serious about river herring bycatch wherever it is. And if this becomes a problem, this is what we'll do. I mean, I agree. It's just really explicit and in demonstrating that we're serious about this throughout the waters that we manage. I think it's, as Vincent said, I think it's the intent to just bring that forward.
Is there any further council discussion? Lori?
I would just suggest for clarity and consistency that it is it if catch of river herring and shad, not bycatch. Bycatch is legally defined as discards. We're talking about catch of river herring and shad. I just want to keep those terms very clear.
Tom and PK, you okay? Okay. Any comments from the audience? Back to the council. Tom.
Sorry, just the wording is documented to have increased in the Georges Bank area. I think that's the perfection that we had just discussed. So after that, I think it reads right.
Okay, we're going to move this along. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. The motion carries 13-001. Matt, is there any further business from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is one more committee motion pertaining to priorities, and if it's more appropriate for us to, I'm happy to show it now, but if we can delay this to our priority discussion.
No, actually, I think given the great interest by the audience and many members of the council itself, I think that you should put it up on the board so everyone understands what the intent of the committee was. And then, we're not going to solve Amendment 5 issues today. But following this, I'd like to move right on to the next agenda item, and we'll build off of that as we can. So if you could just put it up on the board, and this will segue into our priority discussion later this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Karen has it already. Excuse me, it's management priorities, not research, my mistake. to recommend that the council to recommend to the council that the top and only herring management priorities for 2014 be addressing the disapproved elements of Amendment 5 and action related to industry-funded monitoring. All other herring-related actions would fall below the line. That passed unanimously in committee.
Yeah. Mary Beth.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I made this motion at the committee, and I think it truly is it's very important. I mean, one of the issues I have with the herring cap is that, you know, the industry really doesn't have the tools to manage this well. There's been a couple times, I mean, yesterday we were talking about yellowtail, and I heard people say, oh, well, the fleet needs to manage this. Well, I don't know where anybody got the idea that the fleet can manage that. I mean, clearly you have the majority of the scallop fleet operating in a bycatch avoidance program, and then you got some guy who goes out and targets them. It's like, you know, hello, but we don't have the ability to manage that behavior. I mean, there's always going to be one out there, and it's just amazing because you see it happen again and again and again in regions throughout the country. It's not an issue that's specific to New England. They're having these discussions in the Gulf of Alaska. They had them prior in the Bering Sea. And the one thing that we need to do is to figure out a way to put 100% observers on these boats in a way that the industry can afford it. So, you know, in the Bering Sea, we have observers on the boats at a cost that the industry is willing to accept and support. We want those people on the boat. We want to be accounted for down to the vessel level. Get everybody accountable. We are for that. So that is the reason that I made this motion, and we need to figure out a way to get there because there's always going to be that wingnut out there who's going to do the exact opposite of what he's supposed to do, and everybody's impacted by it when he hits the dock. And that's just the way it is. So I think we need to really move away from this, oh, the fleet can manage it. Let's incentivize the fleet to do this. Well, that sounds good. That's kind of interesting, but it never works out.
Tom.
The one comment I would make on this motion is today we were not planning on approving any priorities. The intent today was, and will be, you'll hear later, is just to get all the ideas out on the table so that the executive committee can take a look at the priority ideas and then try and work on prioritizing them for the next meeting so that they can come in with a recommendation to the council. You know, this type of information from the Herring Committee, and I think the Groundfish Committee and maybe even the Skate Committee have similar advice they want to give the Executive Committee. I'm just not real sure what to do with this motion at this point.
Sure. And I'll address that, Tom. My intent was just to clearly demonstrate to the public that the Herring Committee is committed to resolving and working with the agency to address the issues that were not approved in the amendment. So I think it's a great segue into the 1 o'clock ATSI monitoring discussion. But before that, we have Matt and Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out that the committee was aware that this may not necessarily require any council action today, but just to make people apprised of what the committee was thinking. So we don't need to. I don't feel the committee felt compelled to have any council action on this.
Tom.
Well, thanks. And before we move on, I have to admit I feel a little bit managed in terms of how we're going to transition into a mid-range solution to Amendment 5 disapproval. And to be honest, I think it's probably premature to identify that as something, the only thing that we're going to work on next year. I'm not yet convinced that we couldn't do most of it in the several meetings we have in the rest of this year. Speaking to Mary Beth's point about wing nuts in the fishery, I think we've talked for a long time about bad actors and bad fishing practices and how we're going to do that. I think, unfortunately, wing nuts or fishery-wide bad fishing practices have impacts. And they have detrimental impacts, not only that resource, but to other fisheries as well. And that is a conversation that I think we should have before we move on to the sort of larger, big picture, at sea monitoring, cost sharing conversation. And that is the issue that's come up time and time again. And every one of us has fielded phone calls and emails and seen it with our own eyes in the numbers the issue of paddock bycatch on George's this year in the herring fishery. The Groundfish Committee heard testimony from former council members on this issue. We have a Groundfish Advisory Panel, unanimous motion saying that we need to deal with this issue immediately. You know, the Executive Committee brought this up. I mean, it is a central and urgent issue for us to deal with, and unfortunately, parking it into priorities for next year and a longer, expanded process across multiple FMPs doesn't cut it, at least not in my mind. And so I think we need to discuss what we're going to do in the short term. I think Mary Beth made the point that everybody's for accountability. Well, I'm for accountability. Everybody's for that as quickly as possible. Well, I'm for that too. Now, what do we do in the meantime? Can we afford to continue to have a completely unaccountable, a largely unaccountable fishery that's ruining the future of our groundfish resource? We only have one bright spot, and that's George's Bank haddock. And unfortunately, it's at risk right now. So with all that said, I think we should have a discussion about what we can do in the meantime. And with that, I'd move to request an emergency action to prohibit the use of midwater trawl gear in New England federal waters by vessels with a herring A or B permit unless and until that component of the fishery is covered with 100% at-sea monitoring and comprehensive dumping regulations similar to existing closed Area 1 dumping regulations are implemented fishery-wide.
Is there a second to this motion? Seconded by Terry Alexander. Well, I suspect we'll have some. Okay, Tom.
Well, I'll bring up my rationale, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this. I know it's significant, but I'll tell you, I have heard, and my phone has rung time and time again all summer, and I've had this conversation with a number of other people in the room, that we in the groundfish fishery simply cannot afford the unaccountable bycatch of haddock that we're seeing on George's. We have a Bonanza 2010 year class, and it's getting pumped up and thrown over or stuffed into lobster bait bags. That's unacceptable. We've spent a number of meetings discussing how to mitigate the groundfish disaster. My first and best idea for mitigating the groundfish disaster is not to wipe out the only bright spot we have left. That is George's Bank haddock. We cannot afford to throw that all over, and that's what we're doing right now. We've been working on this accountability program for a long time. These concerns aren't new. What is new is the disapproval from the service. What is new is a 2010 Bonanza haddock year class that's all over the bank, and I think we need to do something about it. This doesn't say this gear has to go away forever. This isn't about banning a fishery. This is just saying that, as we've discussed all the way along, unless we can get the accountability that Mary Beth and others, myself included, want, we can't afford this fishery and its impacts. That's my rationale for the motion.
All right. I'm going to go around the table this time.
Do you want to start with me?
Yeah. Who? PK.
We already have another motion up before this, don't we? I mean, this is a totally separate motion, or does it tie into...
No, that's not a motion. That was a point of information.
It
was a committee
statement. It says motion.
No, it's a statement.
Well, it does, but it,
okay.
The reason it went up on the board was just as an explanatory. Tom, do you have...
Well, I guess I have a question. Our published agenda for this meeting talked about the Herring Committee report, approved final measures, catch caps, riverhead, shearing head in the fishery, river herring and shad, sorry, in the fishery. There was no notice on the agenda that we would consider emergency action for the herring fishery, and I'd like to turn to Mitch and just make sure before we debate this motion whether or not we can actually take this action.
Mitch?
Yeah, it was not on the agenda. I think it's outside of the scope of this. And not to mention, I think there's serious question about whether this would meet the criteria for an emergency action.
Tom?
Yeah, well, as I understand it, emergency actions, by their very nature, often come up unexpectedly. In fact, that's one of the criteria of an emergency action. It's an urgent, unforeseen event. That's what we have here. I did not expect that after 6 years of working on Amendment 5, we would have almost full disapproval of the meat of that amendment. That's where we are. And now we're hearing that we're going to take several years to create the fix, to get what we all want, which is 100% accountability to catch in this fishery, right? We also have heard, and every single one of us has heard this, of what's going on in Georgia's Bank this year. It's unacceptable. That's the nature of this emergency, and we've dealt with emergency actions routinely in this council that weren't on the agenda. They're urgent, unforeseen events with significant management issue. If this isn't a significant management issue, I'm not sure what is. I think it's appropriate that we debate and discuss this action.
Mitch?
Well, the partial disapproval of Amendment 5 occurred this summer, and I believe the testimony that occurred that you're referring to occurred well before and offered an opportunity to put this on the agenda. I think it would only be fair for people to have advance notice that this was going to occur. It wasn't instantaneous, and the issue of haddock bycatch is not an unforeseen event. There's a haddock catch cap, and it's meant to address haddock bycatch.
Tom?
So just to be clear, are you arguing against the action, or are you arguing against the motion being debated and discussed?
I'm saying that it is outside of the scope of this meeting, but I'm also saying that the basis for an emergency action doesn't appear to be there now, from the elements that you've described.
And I'll just go ahead and address both those points sequentially. We routinely take up and pass emergency actions that are later acted upon by the Secretary that are not on the agenda. Whether you like the content of this emergency action or whether you think it merits discussion, it's beside the point. Are we really going to tie our hands to never taking emergency action that isn't on the agenda?
Tom, we're going to continue the debate. So, with that in mind, let's go around the table, have our debate, and we'll either move it up or down. Terry.
Seconding this for discussion because I think it needs to be discussed. I personally have taken a lot of those phone calls, and I personally have spent time on the water near the fleet of boats that they're accusing of. I haven't witnessed it myself, but I've had lots of conversations that people that have seen it say they've seen it. I was looking through the notes from the AP meeting, and there seems to be no proof of it, but Jim Odlin wrote us a letter, and I highly respect Jim's opinion and his captains who have spent plenty of time doing that fishery, the midwater fishery, are the ones that are telling me that it's happening. So, I don't know what we got to do to fix it, but it's a problem that we need to address, and I don't think we can ban midwater fishing at this meeting or ask for emergency action, but I thought it needed to be discussed at the table there. So.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The AP committee did wrestle with this pretty hard. I think some of the members of that committee are in the room here today. Ultimately, they could not come to a consensus agreement about the issue of haddock and midwater trawlers. As a council member, I think this is going to be one of the challenges that we're going to face if we shift over to ecosystem-based management. I mean, we're starting to try to think about how different components of this resource interact. We need to think hard about how different sectors of the fishery affect other stocks. I think I'm going to have to vote this one up.
PK.
Yeah, I'll be brief. I agree. I agree with what Tom proposed. And I would just say that if it can't be voted up or down today, that we put it on the agenda for the next meeting. But I do agree with Tom that it could be done in an emergency action.
Vincent?
I have to agree with the previous speakers. All the years and all the complaints that I ever heard, it's always been about this sector of the fleet. I don't like to single out anybody, and I'm not so sure it meets the criteria of emergency, but it's obvious that it's something that we really have to deal with, and we can't spend 3 years doing it. Thank you.
Ella?
I actually don't agree with the previous speakers on one premise, and that is that I am I feel very strongly that public input is important, and how I feel about this motion itself is immaterial to the fact that we have not noticed the public and there is no one here to speak. And I will vote this down because of that.
John?
I agree with Ellen. I think this is a serious issue, especially with some of the people that actually are on the waterfront on a regular basis. However, not having noticed of some affected parties, as well as my reading of the emergency action, I'm going to oppose it.
Frank?
Thank you. I think everybody knows my feeling on emergency actions. I totally agree with what's in here. I can't support it as an emergency at this time. I would like to see it on the agenda for the November meeting. I kind of agree that it doesn't, while it is an emergency and a crisis on the water, I don't think it rises to an emergency action. So I will be voting it down, even though I agree with it.
Mike?
I'm quite sympathetic towards the intent of this. I also, though, have reservations about the public not having input and so on. In this case, I have some reservations because while I'm sympathetic towards what's been said, I haven't seen any. It's come upon me with so little preparation, and, you know, it's hard to make a good judgment based on substance, so that concerns me as well. There is an aspect of it that I'm sympathetic to that goes beyond just concern about wasting a good year class of haddock. Part of this obviously pushes forward the issue of how we get on with a framework that allows more industry support for observers. And frankly, I am quite concerned about that as a general issue that's sort of plagued fisheries management in the U.S. for 20 years, particularly in this region. So I would very much like to see something that pushes that ball forward.
Mary Beth?
Well, I guess I would just ask if there's ever been a fishery banned through an emergency action. I mean, could you even do that? Regardless of the issues, obviously, notice to the public is extremely important. I already said earlier that, you know, we don't have any herring fishermen. I think there are a couple, you know, representatives of the industry here, but no fishermen. And I think that I do agree with some of the comments. I mean, relative to Jimmy's letter, and I also have a lot of respect for Jimmy, and I think that some event did occur out there. But on the other hand, I also know that the level of, observer coverage out there has been quite high, and I'd like to see the data. Obviously, I have a lot of concerns about it, but I don't see how anyone could move this forward today either way. But, I mean, I can't quite picture banning, a fishery, because this is banning a fishery on George's Bank. We're not going to be going to George's Bank and using, you know, purse seines. That's not going to be happening. So the impacts of this are very, very significant. And I don't see how anyone could do it through an emergency action today or any other day.
David?
I understand why the maker of the motion is so concerned about this issue. It's been brought to my attention as well. Clearly, if some of the allegations are true, then we really do have a significant problem with the haddock bycatch cap and that it's not being tallied properly. That is, the haddock that's being discarded is not being tallied properly. But it's all hearsay. I have repeatedly told fishermen, provide photos, do more than just create a web of rumor and innuendo. Yeah, there's some bycatch and I'm sure some discard of haddock. As a matter of fact, after I got the information from Jimmy Odlum, I called Amy Van Atten and I asked her if she would be willing to share some information with me as to what are the observers seeing. And she sent me a brief note indicating that the observers are not seeing what has been alleged. But she indicated that she's more than willing to, through the center, the regional office, provide some updated reports as to what is being observed so that we'll have some better information to use, information based upon what observers are seeing as opposed to what the claims are. I don't doubt that there's some haddock floating on the water, floating on the ocean out there with the white bellies as claimed by Jimmy Odlum. I doubt that it's from horizon to horizon. I want more information regarding what's going on. Clearly, we have a great year class out there that could be at risk. I've already indicated earlier my concern about that particular year class in reference to the decreased minimum size for haddock. So I'm not willing to support this at this time. I want some actual facts and figures in my hand before I make a request for an emergency action for such an extreme measure without facts.
Sherry?
I'm going to agree with Dave and Ellen. I think that we need to have some information that we're actually working with to understand if this is a reality or not a reality or how much of a reality it is, as well as we don't have the public input here and nobody is really prepared to address this. Thanks.
Mark?
Yeah, I too agree with the intent of this, but I agree there's some serious due process issues with this.
John?
I too have heard what people who use one gear accuse people who use another gear of, and I too have heard from the Science Center that a different opinion. And so what do you know? It's a confused picture, and what people say may be different from what the facts are. This is the world we operate in and in which we have to make decisions. What I read up on the motion is that until the fishery is covered with 100% at-sea monitoring and comprehensive dumping regulations. So how long is that going to take? Well, the fact of the matter is that's going to take some time. And until those things are done, a fishery is effectively banned. And so this is serious. And so before we take that very serious step to eliminate a fishery, we ought to have more than what one gear says about another gear. We ought to have some really serious information. And so let's get that information before we take a very serious, precipitous step that eliminates the fishery.
Before I go for a second bite at the apple, I'm going to go into the audience. Okay, I see three hands, or four hands, and we're limited to that. I can't see. Is that Jackie?
Yeah.
Okay, Jackie, John, Dave, and Don. And then we're going to come back to the council and move this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just going to mention what was mentioned before by Terry and also by Tom, that the groundfish advisors during our discussion and meeting last week, we also passed a motion that raised our concerns about the bycatch of haddock in the herring fishery, and recommended through our motion that that the council and the groundfish committee and now the council do something about that. We didn't talk at length about solutions or options, but we did discuss our great concern and had a motion passed that we wanted it to be addressed with as soon as possible. Thank you.
John.
John Howard, Chatham. You know, we sat through this a long time ago. We were all making out deposit slips from that 2003 year class of haddock that nobody seems to give a shit where it ever went. We never caught it, and yet we were hearing stories about the same things you're hearing again right now. The only people left in this industry are trying to hang on with everything they have to survive, and we hear this. This isn't just a rumor because we don't like midwater trawlers. I've seen it. I've lived it. I've written articles about it. Yeah, Dave Haggerty in Maine that came public about it. You have guys in New Bedford that are seeing this. They're towing the side of them day in and day out. You lowered the size for snapper haddock so they could bring them in for 6.5-inch cod end or 6-inch square. They're landing them, and they're towing beside the same guys. There's three pairs on George's today. I spoke to tuna fish guys knowing about tuna fish today on George's, but there's three pairs. They floated around with them all night last night, waited for the stuff to settle, and they're fishing today. You know what they're doing. The guys that are docking sabiki rigs down to the bottom to catch herring for hook baits on George's for tuna fish today can't get by the haddock, the baby haddock. But I still want to get back to 2003. Where the hell did they all go? Some of you people were sitting up there when we had this big discussion in Portland, Maine. We were going to make a fortune on haddock. We went from 750,000 metric ton to 550 down to nothing. And nobody ever asked where that biomass of haddock went. We've got them east of the Cape right now. We had a gill netter off of Chatham the other day. Two boats came by towing. He caught some snapper haddock. He's got 6.5-inch mesh. They're towing the sock, and they left. I guess they didn't catch enough. But we know what's going on. And there's a lot of people sitting in here today that were here years ago when we're going to get rich on the last biomass that know what's going on and who can go back to their ports and say, well, I really don't think there's enough information to justify this. I was on George's 5 years ago targeting haddock in the spring, catching 10,000 pounds every two tides. We were doing damn well. Two of the boats showed up that morning when I left. I was back within 30 hours. The next trip, I had 4,000 pounds for two tides. They had devastated the place. How many times do we have to keep talking about this? For 33 days this summer, I had 18 observed trips to watch me halt one string of 12-inch mesh for my 2,600 pounds of skates and five nets for a five-minute soak for my 4,000 dogs. Chatham had eight to five observers every single morning for 10 active boats. And for you people to not fund the most destructive fishery we have today is out of my mind. You said you didn't have the money for funding for observers before we even started the fishing year. There's nobody fishing. You should have a cash surplus right now for observer coverage because there's nobody fishing. The groundfish fleet in New Bedford is probably 20% of what it was just even last year. I speak to those guys. There's nobody fishing in Chatham for groundfish except three boats the entire summer that have put groundfish gear on. It's dogs and skates. There's no reason to put the coverage that you did with us when you have this going on and to say you can't put 100% observer coverage. I don't want to see what happens to this biomass of haddock, which happened in 2003. And like I said, the people that are sitting up there representing their ports and the representatives should really, really think about how you're going to go back and say, well, I don't think this was justifiable. Thank you.
Dave.
David Gaithel, Hampton, New Hampshire. Obviously, this is a certainly emotionally charged issue. I'll make a couple of points. The first is to the issue of bad actors. Unless the regional administrator authorizes kneecapping, the industry has no way of dealing with bad actors legally. And that's somewhat facetious, but it's also somewhat serious. This is an issue, but we can't go out and beat the crap out of somebody. They do tend to frown on that. I think it's called assault and battery. Second, I believe this motion should have been ruled out of order before the discussion even took place. As much as I agree with a lot of the speakers, there was ample time to notice this. the letter from Jimmy Audlin came back in July. You know, it takes 23 days notice to put something on the agenda. This discussion should not even be occurring. But as long as it is, it does beg several questions here. And the third point I want to make is we need facts. We're in Hyannis. We're not in Salem. We can't have a modern day witch hunt. And the fourth point I want to make is to the previous gentleman's point. I don't know how we're deploying observers, what methodology is being used to deploy the observers, but we're wasting a lot of observer coverage on things that are getting us no information of any use whatsoever. Well, I get called 19 times in 15 days in July and August to take an observer out to observe 14 pounds of discards in the whiting fishery. After you had received this letter from Jimmy Audlin, I talk to the observers constantly. The observers tell me they will not go on a trip to Georges Bank unless they haven't had any work for at least 2 weeks. They'd rather starve than go to Georges Bank. They want to go on day boats. These people are not being deployed randomly. They're being allowed, whether it's the observer companies or the observers themselves, they're being allowed to cherry-pick their trips in a number of these companies. And that is giving you a biased sample of the fishery. There's a reason you don't have the coverage on Georges Bank. They don't want to go there. I've been told this by numerous observers from all three companies. It's not just from any one company, and it's not just from any one observer. And that is the serious problem that we have. We have to deploy observers on these boats and get this information. As I've said before with groundfish, 10% of the people catch 90% of the fish. 90% of the coverage is on the people that catch 10% of the fish. You're wasting our taxpayer money. And it's the same with this fishery. A handful of people are catching, what is it in the herring fishery? 20 boats catch 94 or 96% of the fish. Why are you wasting all this coverage on the people that catch 6%? You're not getting any useful information. So this is an important point that is part of this discussion, and it was part of what I brought up under other business this morning. We need to seriously revamp this observer program. We need to hold these observer companies accountable. This process is not working. You folks at the Science Center and the regional administrator and this council are not getting the information they need out of this program because the program is not being run in such a way that it will produce the information that you need. So that's part and parcel of this larger discussion, and I just wanted to get it on the record because I think it's a very, very important point that's been highlighted by the fact that we're sitting here basically having a witch hunt because we don't have any hard information to work from. Thank you.
Don?
Don Swanson, I am speaking right now as a recreational fisherman, and I also sit on the Heron Advisory Panel. As you people sitting here today, you just get hit with this blinded. The same thing happened to us on the advisory panel, too, when it was brought up to us. As much as I know there's a lot of good year classes of the haddock out there, something probably is happening out there. But from hearing it from just one source, there's no way that we on the panel could approve this or accept this from just one source itself. I even seconded it so we could have discussion at the meeting. And then I had to vote it down because, like I say, one source is not enough to cause the kind of problems this is going to cause. I do believe that it should be looked into. It should probably be on the agenda of your next meeting, and so forth. So I would disapprove of this right now. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. We're going to start first with Mitch, then Russ, and then go around the table again.
So the
the notice for this meeting says that council action will be restricted to those issues specifically listed in this notice and any issues arising after publication of this notice that require emergency action, provided that the public has been notified of the council's intent to take final action to address the emergency.
Russ? Then we'll go to start with Tom and go around.
Sure. I just wanted to address some of the concerns that we heard from the public. I think first off, it's important to note that observers do not pick the trips that they go on. They are assigned to trips, and observers generally specialize in certain fisheries and things like that. So their preference in terms of what trips that they want to go on is not a factor in how they're assigned. The priorities that are set in terms of assigning observer coverage to various fisheries are done through the SBRM process, and it is a complex process. Obviously, the concerns here in terms of where observers should be deployed are very dynamic. I think if we eventually get through this agenda item and get on to the industry-funded observer piece that we'll hear from next, you'll start to hear where we're trying to make some progress in terms of putting mechanisms in place to allow us to have industry-funded observer programs so that we can improve the coverage that we have on these fisheries.
Tom.
Thanks. I guess I'm not sure if we were to discuss this at our next meeting, would it then not rise to the level of emergency? I mean, so we put it on the agenda. Is it an emergency? Because we discussed it here. I mean, it just seems a little bit circular. So I guess while I have the mic, I'll just finish out and talk about the idea of a witch hunt and a lack of information. And I think a lot of people have talked an awful lot about that and didn't start today because we've been talking about this witch hunt and this lack of information for 10 years. And this amendment was supposed to fill that void and get us the hard information about the catch and bycatch in this fishery. And like I said, the crux of this amendment was disapproved. And here we are. Now we're starting a long bureaucratic process to try to do that again. And we're still hearing, well, we can't possibly do anything else because we don't have the information. Again, it's getting pretty circular. We talked earlier in this meeting here on a different agenda item about the difference between our fisheries here in the U.S. and Canada. You might have noticed that Canada got a tremendous amount of yield out of that 2003 haddock year class. Tremendous amount. We're all still scratching our heads. Well, I wonder why we never caught all those haddock. I wonder, that's so bizarre and weird. There is one key difference that we didn't talk about earlier in this meeting. They don't have any midwater trawlers on their side of the line. They don't allow that gear. They don't allow that fishery. We do. And this 2010 year class, and it bears repeating, is the only bright spot for the future of groundfish, at least in the near term. And we're going to repeat our mistake. And I don't think we can afford to.
Terry.
So I've heard a lot of talk about observers and stuff around the table. And I'm not sure why they're missing, why we're missing that information, but we're missing that information somehow. So that being said, would it be okay if I entertained a motion to table this until our next meeting? Would you entertain a motion to table this until the next meeting?
You can do whatever you want, Terry.
And not even need a second?
You'll need a second.
I'm going to make a motion to table this till the next meeting when the public's better noticed.
Seconded by Frank. It's non-debatable, right? It's non-debatable. So on the motion to table or postpone discussion on the motion on the board to the next meeting, table. Those who support the motion on the board to table, please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining. Yeah. So it's 11-1-1.
Unclassified. But we eliminated that.
Okay, Matt, is there any further report from the Hearing Committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, Lori, but I believe that it completes the material from the Hearing Committee.
Everybody else good with that? Is the NIMS team ready to go? Move right into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to take us into ATSI monitoring, or do you want to